If people are triggered, sit with the triggering and figure out why it's triggered you.
If you are not happy with a 50% CAGR for the next couple of years, or even Saylor's, you know, projection of it's going to drop to, you know, 40 and then 30 and whatever, but still outpacing inflation by far.
What programs do we need to sign up for? What educational material do we need? And what curriculum should we be following?
Like,
none.
If your goal is a Lamborghini, then yeah, keep doing what you're doing. But you know what? That's a pretty shitty goal, honestly.
Metaplanet, by the way, we're a hotel company, like a budget hotel company. Now they're a Bitcoin treasury company.
It seems very obvious to me that the average Bitcoiner views Bitcoin as money and it wants nothing to do with all of this nonsense.
I worked on Wall Street for 18 years. I was in foreign exchange markets. I know the tricks that get pulled when these new financial markets get rolled out.
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Wave podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Mr. Daniel Prince. Had an absolute blast chatting with him about everything, all the hot topics, Knots versus Core, treasury companies, lending products. We went down some of the other rabbit holes that he has explored since finding Bitcoin, related to health, education, geoengineering. So lots of fun and interesting topics. Really think you will enjoy this one. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got Daniel Prince here. Daniel, welcome back to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thank you for having me, mate. Nice to see you in Prague.
Yeah, good to see you there. Glad I finally got to shake your hand. And hey, let's start with that real quick. How was Prague for you? Everything you were hoping for?
Yeah, I always love it there. It's well, I've been to each event, so that was number three for us. And the guys always put on a great show, Martin, Matthias. Yeah, and what was really interesting, Isabella hosted the first day, and I was filling in for her so she could run and do some clothes changes and breaks and get some lunch and whatever else. But the first thing she asked was, who here is at their first ever Bitcoin conference or Bitcoin meetup or whatever? And like 50% of the audience put their hands up at that point. And I was like, wow, this is really exciting, actually. Like, you know, what is bringing them here? Why? It's not just clever advertising and propaganda marketing. There's definitely, you can feel that shift, that vibe, and you could feel it there as well. Lots of families there, lots of people asking questions and getting involved and getting up in front of the booths and learning about hardware wallets, coming to the book stand where we were signing books. It was great, great, great conference, as always. How did you go? Yeah. Was it your first one?
That was my first time at Prague, and it was fantastic. It was surreal for me, speaking on the main stage, giving a keynote. I've only been in Bitcoin 3 years, and so to see where I started, you know, trying to figure out crypto, and then to be speaking at BTC Prague was pretty amazing. But yeah, it's so fun just to be... It's big, but it's small enough that, you know, I get to bump into folks like yourself who I've been listening to, you know, your podcast for years. So it's always a blast. I encourage anyone who's listening to try to find those events, try to find those meetups. It's great listening to podcasts, reading the books and everything, but there's just something about that human connection that you can't beat. So
yeah. And thanks for coming across. It's a big effort for you guys from America to get over there. So, you know, I always appreciate We had, who else over there? Larry came over, yeah. Sam. There was a bunch of people from the US. Names are escaping me at the moment. But yeah, it's a way. Yeah, Mark Moss was there as well, right? You know, these are big names, well-known in the industry, and it's just great to see them come across. Obviously, Saylor, Eric Weiss. Yeah, it's brilliant. And
yeah,
the way Europe is set up with so many different countries so close to each other and so many different cultures and so many different languages, so many different ideas, so many different projects. It's just awesome to get everybody into one spot. So you get all the German guys coming and, you know, with everything that they're doing, and you get all of the, you know, even people from Bulgaria are doing great work down there. They're throwing a conference soon in October. We've got the Baltic Honey Badger coming up in Riga in Latvia. We're off there next week, and then straight after that we're off to Helsinki for BTC Hell in Finland. And we've got some great little conferences. Well, there were meetups almost turning into mini conferences. We got one in Bury St. Edmunds, which is in the kind of southeast of the UK, coming up in September, and then one in Manchester at the back end of November. It's on fire, mate. We were at a London meetup just the other day. My wife co-founded Women of Bitcoin UK with a friend of hers, and they put on a little event to invite people to come and learn about Nostr. And it's open to everybody, but it was great to see. It was very small, but it was great to see 12 to 13 women and like three or four men just turned up. One pilot from the US turned up and just found out about the event. And he was just so happy that he's like, my God, you guys have a Nostr meetup here in a Bitcoin place? Like, this is awesome. So it's all grassroots efforts, and it's going a long, long way.
Yeah, I think that's the key. That's the key there, is that this is a grassroots effort, and it's just people starting things. And yeah, like I've talked with Ivan and George over in Bulgaria, and some of the stuff they're doing is amazing. And I think a place like Prague is where you begin to see like all of these disparate groups who are doing their own thing kind of come together, and you get to learn about, you know, meet people who are doing amazing work all over the world. So lots of fun. Where I want to start our discussion here, because this has been a very hot topic the last few months, and you're not very shy on social media. You tend to say exactly what you're thinking, and it's the knots versus core debate. Feels a little bit old, but we haven't talked in a while, and so I would be curious if you would like to frame sort of your position on this. And then I'm also curious, I think some people feel like this is existential sort of stuff, and some people feel like this is problematic, but you know, their conviction in Bitcoin continues regardless of sort of the way it plays out. Where do you stand on everything?
Yeah, interesting. I got pulled into this rabbit hole back when Mechanic went on Preston's podcast. Almost, it could even be at this point close to 2 years ago, and he was talking about mining was in a bad place. Mining, you know, was too centralized. And it was all very kind of like, I don't want to say doom and gloomy, but it was a bit of a wake-up call. And then not long after that, we had, what's the timeline of this stuff? Do you remember the drive chain stuff? That started coming out of nowhere. And yeah, it was really, really pushed.
I don't remember when that was, because I listened to the same episode on Preston's podcast with Mechanic, and that really dialed me in. Mechanic became like one of my favorites to follow overnight. I don't remember when Drive Chain would have been, but yeah, a lot of these topics have all, and Mechanic's been kind of like one of the thought leaders on one camp, I think, for quite some time. So what was your takeaway from the mining centralization, and how does that feed into to the core knots stuff that we've talked about with Op Return recently?
Yeah, exactly. So like Mechanic then started, obviously had started working for Ocean at that point, and they were going down the rabbit hole of the block templates and whatever else. And then all of this spam started turning up, and they were very much, well, we don't want that shit going on the blockchain. So what can we do about it? What's the fix? And the spam was originally these BRC20 tokens. So it had all the drive chain stuff, which was, you know, we can put shitcoins on the blockchain, and this will basically attract a load more people to Bitcoin and obsolete the shitcoin chains. That was kind of the way it was being advertised. And then you had the BRC20 tokens, and then you had inscriptions, ordinals, runes. All of this stuff just started flooding in, you know, really early 2023. That's why the guys made that website, What the Fuck Happened in February 2023. And that's when all of the, like, the crap on the blockchain really started ramping up. And I did a Spaces with Mechanic January of 2024, so about a year later, because this was still going on and wasn't really getting too much traction within the community. And it's like, oh yeah, it's just degens on the blockchain, they'll soon gamble their way out of money, and anyway, it's all good for the miners, right? That was kind of the way people were just packaging this thing up. But then when you started following the money and trying to figure out, you know, who was really behind this, and obviously you had the Taproot Wizards guys that were pushing this you know, very vociferously with the op return and the wizard JPEGs and the cat JPEGs and all this kind of crap, causing just basic havoc. And then you had the on the halving, you had the fee spike well over like 400, 500 sats per V-byte. So clearly some big problems. And nobody really, again, everybody just, oh, it's degens on the blockchain. So I wanted to find out, you know, what was really driving this. And then there was an announcement for Taproot Wizards got funding of $7.5 million. I can't remember exactly. And I wanted to know who's funding this, like, and why. So I started reading through the reports and the articles and just started following the names of who were the investors. And yeah, shame on you, UTXO management. You know, why are you funding these guys, really, when you are, you know, you're a Bitcoin company? And then there was a company called Starkware. And I had never heard of them. And I started looking around for Starkware. And the first thing I find out, like the big buzz kind of Wired or TechCrunch headlines, $8 billion Israeli startup, Starkware, blah, 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 raises another X amount. I'm like, what? What do they do? And then you go to the website and it's like, layer two solutions for blockchain technology. You're like, oh God, you know, all of this kind of just crappy. Once you've been around the Bitcoin space long enough, it's very easy. Just you can look at one website for 30 seconds and realize, you know, there's shitcoin language all over this. And so I wanted to know, you know, why, who founded it, who was part of it, what else they did. So they've got all these layer two solutions over all these different blockchains and their own token, of course, which is called Starknet, STRK. I'm like, well, what's Starknet? Starknet's an umbrella company of Starkware. And who should be sitting on the board of Starknet? None other than Eric Wall, who was, you know, one of the founders of the Taproot Wizards. So this like, what? Who funded Starkware? So I wanted to know who funded Starkware. And I found out there's a bunch of pure shitcoin VCs that have funded Starkware, including Ethereum Foundation and everybody that's involved with that. And then the two very first funders of it were two guys on the cap table. One was Arthur Brightman, who is the founder of Tezos, which is the biggest shitcoin ICO scam of all time to date, back in 2017 that launched. It's unfortunately still going. And another guy called Hongfei Da. And Hongfei Da, sure enough, leads a blockchain company in China called Neom, if I'm not mistaken, N-E-O-M. Which of course has its own token or whatever else. But in his little bio, when you go like learn about him and what he does, he's apparently a crypto venture capitalist and has made, as a VC, he's only ever made one investment. And that one investment happened to be Starkware. So, okay, so you're not really a, you know, crypto investor if you've made one investment. And his other role in China is to advise the Chinese government on blockchain technology. So, I mean, I don't know how many red flags you need on any company. Like, you know, once I found all that out, I made a tweet about it and Mechanic and I talked about it. We're like, wait a minute. So if it's supposedly degens on the blockchain, just gambling on JPEGs and whatever else, and they will run out of money and it's great for the miners, bro. What if it isn't? What would be the complete opposite end of that would be, you know, state funded attack on the blockchain, you know, and using this kind of idea of just clogging the blockchain as full as you can with shit that nobody gives a freaking care about anyway, to bloat the UTXO set. And I know there's an argument, it doesn't bloat the UTXO set, bro. Well, go look at the graphs, how big the UTXO set is right now. And my node, by the way, that's running a 2 terabyte SSD, I'm getting flash warnings of it's 96% full. This makes it very difficult for new nodes to come in and get spun up if they are going to be storing all of this nonsensical data that's going on, that's gone in the last 2 years. So that was the big thing for me. It's like, right, we, you know, however someone figures out how to do it, how to stop this shit getting onto, or to minimize this shit getting on the blockchain, I'm all in. And then when Knots was released, I'm like, yeah, okay, well, I'm switching straight over to that right now. And but then this is a thing. You can always go back to Core whenever you want, right? And you can still run Core if you like. Just don't upgrade to 30. Or maybe you will upgrade to 30. I don't know. But there's a huge problem as well. Do you remember when all of this started getting questioned? The pull requests were getting questioned. Peter Todd made the pull request, right, to completely lift the limit of the data size on the the filters. And then people were getting muted or blocked on the GitHub. And I was like, what? That is really, really crazy now. Like, this is absolutely, you know, it's always been about attack the idea and not the person. And that just suddenly flipped. And then it all went on to Twitter. And you had some very loud voices calling out people such as Mechanic and calling them, you know, dumb, basically, for not understanding. You don't understand the technology, bro. You're not a coder, bro, and all this kind of stuff. And it was, you know, all of the ad hominem attacks that came, you know, that came from that, you know, personal takedowns, not just a Mechanic, but of other people as well. That, again, was a very telling sign that something really strange was going on. So I urge people, if you've not been down the rabbit hole, don't be afraid to go down there. Don't be afraid of not being too technical. You won't understand it. I'm not a technical guy, you know. I understand different sides of these arguments, but don't be afraid of scratching the surface, looking at both sides of the story and doing your research and making your own decision. I've made mine. I know where my bed is made for now. It even says in my profile, not to your keys, not to your coins. And I think the market has spoken. It's been very vociferous because you now have, out of all the nodes that are out there, I think we're now 16% are running Knots. That's 0 to 16% in a very short amount of time in the grand scheme of things. So the market is saying something. The market is making a very, very strong signal right here. Now, as of time of recording, this argument seems to have settled down a little bit. But it's coming back. There's no doubt it's coming back. I think they're going to push through the upgrade in October for version 30. And this will all start flying around again. So yeah, if you're running a node, thank you. Well done. You should be. You should definitely look into whether or not you should be running Knots. And if you're not running a node, what's stopping you? That there's no real excuse anymore. There are many plug and play options out there. You've got Parman over in Australia that's building nodes on old computers, and he'll ship them to you, and they'll be all ready to go, and he'll even walk you through it via Zoom calls. So yeah, and I know you guys do a lot of good work at getting people set up with nodes. So. I'd like to fire the question back at you with the work that you guys are doing and the conversations you have with getting people set up with nodes. Is this more of a common question nowadays as to, you know, should I be running Core? Should I be running Knots? And what way are you guys, you know, how are you kind of explaining the whole ordeal?
Yeah. So we're getting the question a lot more. We've had a lot of clients who we've helped set up nodes come back to us and say, hey, should I be switching to Knots? Because, version 30, I think, you know, Core, for some of its flaws, I think it was, you know, a fine implementation. We've had a lot of people who have switched, from Core to Knots. We have a lot of people who are just new clients who are just opting for Knots. And the way we're framing it is, you know, we believe Bitcoin is money. The risks associated with running knots are you effectively have more or less a single developer, you know, who's implementing this, probably fewer eyes on it than core, but it's 99.7% the same as core. Mm-hmm. I mean, fundamentally, there are a few basically filtering differences, and it doesn't affect what gets into a block, but you get to have this vote. Do I want to broadcast these transactions that are clearly non-monetary to the network? And I think the interesting thing about this whole thing is, for all of the noise from the core dev side of this argument, it seems very obvious to me that the average person views Bitcoin as money. The average Bitcoiner views Bitcoin as money, and it wants nothing to do with all of this nonsense. So I run knots. It's not that we promote knots, but we make sure that people understand if you don't want to run knots and you're going to run core, there's going to be a big difference between 29 and 30. And, part of it is a technical difference, and part of it's a philosophical difference. What do you want Bitcoin to be? But yeah, you look at the 20,000 reachable nodes. To your point, we need way more than that. I'm very proud to work for a company who has probably contributed to a material amount of the nodes that are on the network at the moment. But you're right. No excuses. Run a node. We need, as Jeff Booth says, we need it to stay, remain secure and decentralized. And that's one of the ways we do it.
And did you see, now, I don't know if this, I can't verify this, but I've seen a lot of chatter about a lot of nodes suddenly came online altogether over the last kind of 6 to 9 months or so whilst all this was playing out, and all were running core. They all went down, weirdly enough, the same time just a few days ago. So people are speculating that they were all run up by Core or someone, a big supporter of Core, to try and, stem the tide. So, I mean, I'm all for more nodes on the network. That's brilliant. But that's just another little tale of this story that I think is going to, rear its ugly head again in the next few months.
Yeah, I saw something about that. Haven't looked into it. I think one important thing for people to understand, if you're listening, think of a node. It is a piece of hardware. And by the way, it's not that complicated to run. You just need someone to show you the right way to do it. But a node is also really an entity. And so, if there is some nefarious group behind Core or something like that who spins up 1,000 new nodes to make it look like, more people are running Core, that doesn't mean that they have more control over the future of the network or anything, because it's like if BlackRock spun up 1,000 nodes tomorrow, and they decided to, change consensus rules, all they've done is they've hard forked and they've created their own little network of 1,000 nodes that no one else is using. And so don't be distracted by the number of nodes that someone can spin up. I could run 10 nodes at my home and it doesn't really make any difference, versus me just running one. So I think that's also another important thing for people to see. Ignore the noise, run a node, do a little bit of research, figure out what implementation you want to run. And if you're talking to me, I'm going to tell you knots or probably stop at core 29, maybe even go back further.
And for the node producers, there was no node booth at Prague. And I couldn't figure out for the life of me why that was. And yeah. I even had a few people ask me, like, is anyone here selling nodes? I'm like, I don't know. Like, where are they?
Yeah, that's interesting. So Start9, I know they go to the Bitcoin conference in the US, and maybe it's a logistical challenge for them or something to get overseas, or they've got other events that they're doing. That's a good point. I didn't even really think about that. We just like we need competition in mining, and we need competition in, the software implementations. I think the more competition we can have for, optimally open source, Bitcoin only, hardware related to running a node. There are some good options out there. Start9 is generally the one we recommend for like plug and play. But I think the more we can get people, providing optionality to the market, the better. It's going to make all the products better. And I mean, it's going to do what free market competition does.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, I want to just sort of, we spent a lot of time on that, but I think that's an interesting and important one. I just want to get your thoughts on some of these hot topics of the day. Bitcoin treasury companies is obviously, it's like, it's for me, it's infuriating because X is just becoming nothing but, clips of Michael Saylor and Metaplanet buying more and all this.
Has there been another announcement today yet?
I don't even know. I can't even filter through the weeds and with all this stuff. I'm curious, though, my position on treasury companies has evolved a little bit. It's maybe a bit more nuanced, because before I was just like, this is just nonsense. Just, you know, ignore it. I'm not like excited about treasury companies necessarily. I would be curious to hear your take, and maybe we can kind of bat that back and forth.
Sure. So, I mean, it's become like this, the Bitcoin treasury company. What does Richard Griesser call it? Paper Bitcoin summer. I love that. Paper Bitcoin summer. So there was an announcement yesterday, and I tweeted it. Paper Bitcoin summer just ramped up to paper shitcoin summer. It's all so tiresome. And there's this Phoenix Group. I don't know, never heard of them. Phoenix Group's strategic Bitcoin reserve, according to a Thursday announcement, the newly formed treasury comprises 514 Bitcoin and 630,000 Solana tokens. I mean, my God. And so, all right. So what is a Bitcoin treasury company? And what, because to me, there's very stark differences. And I think everybody in the Bitcoin community who has been around for, you know, long enough to want to spend their Bitcoin, and I think we'll come on to that in a second as well, you've probably spent hours, if not months, in some cases years, going to the same butcher, baker, candlestick maker, wherever you go, and asking them, do you accept Bitcoin? Because you want them, you know, selfishly, you want to be able to, you know, just walk in and spend Bitcoin and completely opt out of the fiat system. But what you truly want is that butcher to be around the next 5 years, to not go out of business. And what you truly want is your favorite cafe where you can go and get your coffee, your mom and pop store. You want your favorite, your pub, your bar, your restaurant, whatever it is. You want them to be around because they are significant parts of your life. And these businesses are turning over so fast. Like in the UK, you can walk down the high street and half the shops have been closed in the last week because they can't survive. And the reason they can't survive is because they're on a fiat standard. And they're just getting completely either regulated out of business due to retarded, unelected, bureaucrat, local level decisions, or they're getting inflated out of business because of the price inflation and everything. It's, you know, it's a supply shock to them. They can't get the things that they need. So they start cutting corners on the quality of the stuff that you're used to getting. The quality of the stuff that you're used to getting starts going down or smaller. And you start getting pissed off and you start looking around for different ways to, live your life and look for different suppliers. Now, if they just stacked in Bitcoin, and that might even be just 10 to 25% of the profit that they scrape through in weekly dollar cost average, that gives a runway to that business. It could end up saving them. And we all know what happens when you start stacking, you get skin in the game, they understand, and they start buying more. Now, is that a Bitcoin treasury company? To me, no, that's not a Bitcoin treasury company. A Bitcoin treasury company is a company that gets spun up out of nowhere, where some bright spark gets some VC money together to be able to buy a shell company that already exists, a zombie company that already exists, to buy that majority holding of that company that's already listed, because this is the quickest way to market. You have to buy something that's already listed so you can be listed straight up. You just change the ticker symbol. And then you start all of this financial engineering wizardry to attract all of this kind of pent-up demand that people are talking about, the monetary premium that's in traditional finance. You attract all of this stuff to that stock, and all it's doing is buying Bitcoin. It's not offering any goods or services into the marketplace. It's just literally buying Bitcoin. And people just, this stuff got so frothy so quickly. And I'm not sure if you've seen the clip of David Bailey. Again, we're talking about UTXO management. The clip of David Bailey, who's on Udi's podcast, bragging basically.
Yeah.
It's just disgusting. It's like, yeah, we have all these. We have it in this country, and they're behind Metaplanet as well. And we're going to do that. And Metaplanet, by the way, we're a hotel company, like a budget hotel company. Like, what? Now they're a Bitcoin treasury company.
And more worryingly, you have Jack Mallers now in bed with Wall Street, with Cantor Fitzgerald. Like, the people that we were rallying against our whole existence in Bitcoin are now in bed with Tether to create 21, purely just to buy, to list on a stock exchange, purely just to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah. That you are not owed as an investor, by the way. Like, you get fiat exposure to the upside to the extent that it happens, and they get the Bitcoin. I think that's the important distinction here. So I had Mark Moss on the podcast a few weeks ago, and I'm with you 100%. The nuance he maybe enlightened me to that I think I'm open-minded to is you have pensions, institutional investors who can't get access to spot Bitcoin in self-custody. And this gives them, you know, alternative fiat options that in some way are, you know, quote unquote backed by Bitcoin. So that way they can opt out of some of the like very obviously inferior investment vehicles that they've historically had to rely on. So I can, or, you know, even individuals with, like, you know, retirement accounts or what have you. It's like, you know, I would tend toward the ETFs versus treasury companies if that's the case. It's closer to a more pure Bitcoin play. What concerned me, and Mark disagreed with me on this. I said the problem is I see a lot of, like, Bitcoin influencers who are feeling FOMO because they missed out on buying into, I get all of them confused. They didn't buy MicroStrategy early enough. Or I'm like, wait, what, are you a professional investor that feels equipped to evaluate the risks, understand your exposure, and you're a Bitcoin influencer who is buying a fiat product with no promise of Bitcoin at any time in the future? Like, what has happened here? Like, that's kind of my thing. Mark doesn't feel like they're being, you know, because Michael Saylor says there's no second best, he's not really marketing to the retail crowd. And I would argue by going to the Bitcoin conference and talking about their products and levering up, whether you directly say you should buy my product or not, the insinuation is I have a product that I'm talking about selling and I'm telling you all about it. And it's creating a lot of confusion in the market, I think, is the problem for retail, for amateur investors at best. If you're Mark Moss and you're a professional investor, okay, like, you know how to evaluate risk. And he agrees that, like, you know, have majority in cold storage and, you know, self-sovereign Bitcoin. I just fear for a lot of people who have no idea what they're taking on here is maybe my sort of ultimate takeaway.
Yeah. So, yeah. And where I would disagree with the idea of pensions and hedge funds and institutions or whatever else, money managers that are unable to buy spot Bitcoin. Hucksters know this. And the Wall Street are the biggest hucksters out there. And if they can figure out a way to dump on retail, they'll figure out a way to dump on retail. They don't care. To them, it's just numbers and it's just a game. So you've got the traditional way of doing it is you've got the VCs that invest in the company, then the company gets listed, then all of this money goes into marketing. And as you know, the more news and kind of hysteria gets wrapped up around this company, that attracts more VCs listed. Price goes crazy because now retail can get involved. And all those people, they just quietly sell out in the background. And they're just dumping on retail. So dumping on retail is one thing. Dumping on people's pension funds is something really, like, that's next level sick. You know, this is people's retirement. And I've had a lot of conversations with people here in the UK because we've got a couple of these companies that have listed. And, you know, as Bitcoin treasury companies, basically. And yeah, the graph's done the exact thing. It's done the pump and dump. Like, it's done the spike and then it's dumped. And, like, the prevailing narrative is, oh, yeah, but once we've got this new metric now, MNAV, right? Everyone's talking about MNAV. Like, came for the financial revolution and stayed for the MNAV, bro. Like, what are we doing? Like, no one's trading MNAV. Like, no, just shut up. stop saying these words. They're nonsense. And stop getting distracted. It's really discouraging to think that people might be using, what they believe. They might never be able to access these funds. They might get rugged on their retirement fund, on their pension fund. Yes, I understand that argument. And meanwhile, they may as well try and get in on some of these hype stocks and try and time the market. But honestly, it's think about if you are, who are you gonna dump your bags on?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I think that's maybe the way I was. Maybe the sympathy that I had toward what Mark was talking about was like an assumption that the intent isn't to dump on retail, but rather to like passively hold and accumulate. I think this is the distinction though. Is like I would just buy the ETF then if like that's what you have to do. Like that's a much less speculative play. Like you're assuming Bitcoin's adoption is going to increase, number's going to go up, and you just hold that passively as a long-term store of value with none of the self-sovereignty benefits, obviously. But it's better than speculating on the operational execution of a company, to your point, that most of them don't even have a business model. Like the business model is just you give us money, we buy Bitcoin. And I would probably draw a distinction between those things. So I don't know if you had anything else to comment there.
The last thing I'd say, is MicroStrategy a Bitcoin treasury company or not? It didn't start out that way. The way it started out was a 25-year-old software business data analytics company that had some cash on a balance sheet, which the CEO decided to put into Bitcoin to protect his business and employees and with a long-term vision of MicroStrategy being around in the next 50 to 100 years. Over time, that has obviously got way more complicated, is the only word that's coming to mind, the financial engineering and everything behind what they're doing now. But they still have that underlying business. They still have a software business, and they still, as far as I'm aware, are profitable each month, selling that service. You have this, what's this other stuff? MSTY, this MSTY. This has been spun up. This is, from what I understand, a company trading options on MicroStrategy and attracting money to that. And if people are going to send their money into that to try and, what are you trying to do? Are you that greedy that you want to try and outperform Bitcoin, the world's best performing asset for the last 16 yes. years, untouched? Is that it? I really don't know.
I think that is it, because it ultimately comes down to most people don't understand what they're really buying, I don't think. I mean, hell, I wouldn't say I would understand what I'm buying. That's why I don't. But you got a 50% CAGR on Bitcoin, and we're still so early, right? I mean, we talk about this all the time. We're at maybe 1% global adoption. And probably a lot of people who own Bitcoin aren't like Bitcoiners who really understand. They're not in self-custody. It's sitting on the exchange with their Solana and whatever else they've bought. And so I think that's my point, is I can just buy Bitcoin. I can buy it KYC, no KYC, take self-custody. I can go to bed at night knowing that I'm in full control of my wealth. And I don't have to think about what's the accumulation. Like, I just earn Bitcoin, I buy Bitcoin, and I sleep in peace. And if you are not happy with a 50% CAGR, for the next couple of years, or even Saylor's, projection of it's going to drop to, 40 and then 30 and whatever, but still outpacing inflation by far. If you're not happy with that, I don't know that you're ever really going to be happy. I think you probably should just take the win and buy Bitcoin, take it into self-custody, and proceed with your life. That's maybe my general sentiment.
Yeah. And I know Tony had strong opinions on like Bitcoin treasury companies as well. So it's, it's one of these topics that's come up on, we're still using Twitter really as the main sounding board, aren't we? There's obviously a big move across to Nostr, but that's where you're going to find all of these arguments. And again, look into both ends of it, and look into the middle, and come to your own decision.
Yeah, Okay, how about lending products then? A lot of announcements about Bitcoin lending products. It's been around, but it seems like it's ramping up. New options available. I was very disappointed with one I had. I don't know if you've seen the People's Reserve, CJ Constantinos. So I had him on the podcast probably 2 months ago. And a really nice guy, I think, philosophically, and he and I don't really align. But then after the fact, I need to put like a disclaimer on the podcast, because he came out and he's got some coin that if they'll give you better rates on your Bitcoin-backed mortgage if you buy their shitcoin that's available on Solana and Ethereum. I was like, this guy, my impression of him was maybe he's doing something I don't fully align with the, you know, the Bitcoin-backed loans, but he was a Bitcoiner, and I no longer feel that way. So I'd be curious to hear if you have concerns, similar concerns that I have with the lending products.
Yeah, I've not heard of that guy, so I can't speak about that one in particular, but I've heard of Strike and and Mallers and what they're doing, offering these Bitcoin-backed loans. There's just one overhanging question, one niggling question that just won't clear it up. Where does the fiat come from? Because if you are loaning your Bitcoin to someone, a company, they don't have the fiat to give you that you are loaning the Bitcoin for. So you pass the Bitcoin here, they've got to get the fiat from somewhere. So they get the fiat somewhere else. So who is supplying that fiat? That's what I really want to know. Mm-hmm. Where is it coming from? Who are they tied to as well? So if now, look, I worked on Wall Street for 18 years. I was in foreign exchange markets. I know the tricks that get pulled when these new financial markets get rolled out. And you know, I mentioned Cantor Fitzgerald earlier. That's part of the 21 funding. Now, you know, it wouldn't be out of the realms of impossibility for Cantor Fitzgerald to perhaps be one of the liquidity providers to Strike as well. Now, you've got Wall Street back in that. Now, if Wall Street want your Bitcoin, let's assume that to be true, they want your Bitcoin, what kind of product could they spin up that's going to attract a lot of Bitcoin to one or two or even three loan products, where that's all gonna, and this idea of you'll never have to sell your Bitcoin, Michael. You can live like a king and you'll never have to sell your Bitcoin. Sounds like the dream, right? All you've got to do is loan that Bitcoin to me and I will lend you the fiat at 10, 12%, whatever it is. I'm gonna charge you to do that. And yeah, you can go ahead and live yourself a merry, happy life. Except when the price crashes, I'm going to call you up and say, well, you've got to send in more Bitcoin now. And then you've got to send in more Bitcoin. And then it's going, by the way, no, that's all my Bitcoin now. You're going to get rug pulled on the Bitcoin. Now, could Wall Street manufacture a crash at the price of Bitcoin? Many people say, no, it's not correlated. Well, it is. It 100% is now. It has been since January of last year when the ETFs launched. And these guys, they have a lot of power. They can write the headlines, whatever headlines they want. Right now, it's all great. We've got an administration that's crypto-friendly, in air quotes, and this is good. And we're all going to have good regulations around Bitcoin and blah, 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 blah. And at the same time, we have all of these treasury companies announcing Bitcoin treasuries out of nowhere, announcing they're buying thousands and thousands of Bitcoin. Somehow the price is still staying quite suppressed. And you're like, what? Like, you know, how's this happening? So if you create this product and you create a honeypot for all of this Bitcoin, which individuals like you and I might be tempted into putting in to get some fiat so we can upgrade our lifestyle. And then there's a massive flash crash, which is tied into a couple of big bankruptcies on the Bitcoin treasury side, on the actual bourses, you know, there could be a lot of blood on the streets. And before you know it, you're getting margin called. And that Bitcoin will be margin called to the fiat providers. So where does the fiat come from? Yeah. That's all I want to know. List them.
let me know who is providing the fiat.
Yeah, that's a good point. So my caution had always been kind of a bit more just like very straightforward and practical. And that is, if you have a big stack of Bitcoin and you want to post a little bit of that, and you could lose it and life would go on. It's like, okay, you know, and you got safe, secure income and you could handle the volatility of a big crash. Like, and you're good at risk management. You understand that it's not your keys, not your coin. You're trusting that the government's not going to 6102 this thing. Like, okay, like some people I think will escape unscathed. I think the average pleb, probably not, because you probably don't have a massive stack of Bitcoin. You probably aren't making $500,000 a year to cover the payments. You probably haven't analyzed all these risks, much like the treasury companies. You haven't analyzed all the risks associated with giving up your keys. And then the point you raise that I find interesting, because I haven't really thought about, is the back end potential for manipulation from Wall Street. I think people take for granted, because we're so excited, oh, we're a $2 trillion asset class now. It's like, that's not that big. Like, that is a manipulatable market. And I'm not theorizing about, is it being manipulated at the moment? Is price surprised? Like, that's sort of beside the point. The question is, could it, if a ton of capital was behind that effort on Wall Street? And I think the very clear answer would be yes. It's at least in the realm of possibility, if not trivial. So I guess the second sort of more philosophical thing that we talk about, like, this is where Tony and I very much align, is my concern is that it lulls us into a place of complacency that, well, I'm not going to spend my Bitcoin ever. It's like, okay, well, how do you expect these circular economies to be built if you're all you're doing is prolonging the fiat lifeline, you know, by saying, well, I'm only going to spend in fiat. It's like, I just spend and replace. And it's like, well, what about capital gains taxes? It's like, I'll let you figure out what to do about that on a cup of coffee or, you know, some raw milk that you buy or something, you know, like, not financial advice, but also, you know, civil disobedience, perhaps. So I don't know if you'd maybe echo that sentiment, because I did want to ask you about spending Bitcoin and why you think that's so important.
Oh, yeah, it's 100% important. I mean, what are we here to do? Like, are we here just to, like, sit on a stack of Bitcoin and watch number go up in dollar terms or sterling terms, euro terms, wherever you live? No, I'm here to move into the parallel economy and a fair economy. And I found this farm. I was telling you before we started, I found this farm, another Bitcoiner who managed to convince the guy to start accepting Bitcoin for his products. And he's a dairy farmer. So he's got a bunch of dairy cows, but he does beef as well. So you can go there. And he's got a freezer stacked full of wonderful grass-fed beef. It's not grass-fed, then grass-finished. It's just grass-fed beef. So raw milk. And he's generally there, like, you know, getting the milk straight from the machine, for having a conversation with you. And very, very interesting guy. Dora's Dairy, by the way, in the UK, very near Swindon. Go to dorasdairy.co.uk. You'll find it. And I think hopefully he'll be plugging in with Musket soon, who are a British UK British company that are providing point of sale machines, and they'll get them set up and accepting Bitcoin on chain and Lightning, and hopefully doing countrywide deliveries. So, you know, there's a lot of good stuff going on. But I would be chatting to some of the people there about, you know, what are you? I'd always ask them, why are you here? Oh, for the raw milk. And why is that? Oh, for a health problem, you know, this, that, and the other thing. Okay, great. A couple of Greek guys were there. Oh, my mum loves the raw milk to make a special Greek cheese. I'm like, well, that's really cool. It, you know, really interesting. You can't make it from the super milk white water. And so he was shocked that I've turned up. I went with another Bitcoiner. Some other Bitcoiners have been since. He's like, wow, you guys actually spend this stuff? Like, yeah. I explained to him, like, think about the work, the effort that you put in, the time that you've put in to, you know, create this product, these animals that you've reared and, you know, looked after and loved, and this product that is in front of me, raw honey, farm eggs, milk, beef, whatever. I wouldn't want to disrespect you or your time by giving you a debt-based instrument.
Yeah. I want to give you real money. I want to give you sound, hard money that is the, you know, the most incredible medium of exchange that we as a species have managed to invent or discover, whatever side of that argument you sit on, doesn't really matter. Here it is. No, I want to value your time and show you respect by passing you the best form of money humanly possible. And they was like, oh, okay. So, to, you know, on the ground level, to a lot of people, it's still just an investment and we're all just going to get rich, bro, and, you know, whatever else, and drive around in our Lambos. And the idea of it not becoming of a medium, becoming a medium of exchange is very, it just fills me with sadness and darkness if that's what people aren't seeing.
Yeah, I could not agree with that more. I think this is an incredibly important point. Because otherwise, like the point I always make is like gold is pretty sound money and we've had it for a long time. Governments have reserves, you know, some companies have reserves, right? Like people own gold coins. And that has done absolutely nothing to stop the money printer and central banking. Like the fact that a sound commodity exists does not mean that we aren't going to live in a fiat world. Like Bitcoin doesn't magically fix that. Human action, leveraging the tool of Bitcoin, I think is what fixes it. And I love the way that you frame it, is that because you recognize what you're giving up is way more valuable than the paper that you could give up. Like you in some way are sacrificing because your goal isn't to get the best deal on the, you know, your goal is what are the decisions I can make for myself, for the people around me, the vendors and you know, service providers that I care about? Like, how can I build a better world for them, even if it means giving up this thing? And by the way, you can spend and replace. Like, keep in mind, like you can, there are exchanges where you can continue to buy Bitcoin, so you don't have to decrease your stack. But I think the time preference, like the time preference still seems very high for many people, and they're looking for a lending product so they don't ever have to spend the Bitcoin. And it's like, you need to step back, I think, and say, what is my goal with Bitcoin? If your goal is a Lamborghini, then yeah, keep doing what you're doing. But you know what? That's a pretty shitty goal, honestly. If your goal is the bright orange future, then you need to make decisions that orient us toward the bright orange future. And that includes spending and then replacing your Bitcoin. And, you know, like so many people have had their decisions about purchases they make change because of Bitcoin. And it's like that, okay, continue in that direction. Now, so like, what do you do with that? I'm not going to spend on nonsense. I'm going to spend on important things. Then spend the best money on those important things to fuel the fire for that person. They realize that they're actually earning in a form of money that isn't going to be debased. Like, do the right thing, basically, is I think what it comes down to. So anyway, I could rant about that all day because it drives me crazy. I don't want to spend my Bitcoin. Like,
well, there's a couple of places people can look. David Bennett from the Bitcoin And show, he shills the circle P. And that's a place where you can go and buy all kinds of goods and services for Bitcoin. He talks about is it Ben Justman from Peony Lane Wineries? He's got him on there. You can buy his wine. He's got the soap tallow guy. You can buy his soap. He's got a honey guy, maple syrup guy. And over here in the UK, we've got plebeian.market, where you've got a bunch of people signing up to sell their services over on there, and their goods in a market.
The first one called Circle P.
What was Circle it? P. Yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna find that.
Yeah. Bitcoin okay. And is the podcast, Dave Bennett. Okay. None Your Business on Twitter.
Okay. Okay. Terrific. Okay. So we've taken a lot longer to get through these than I was thinking, but it doesn't surprise me. There's a lot to be said. Let's hit a few topics sort of for fun here. It is sort of in the vein of, you know, making these changes in your life. I know you've probably made a lot since, you talked about, you know, this like local farmer, this rancher who you're getting food from. Have you gone down like the health rabbit hole since finding Bitcoin? Like, has that changed a lot for you? Or have you always sort of shopped that way for food?
Yeah, more and more now. I went down
What did I do? I went down the sugar rabbit hole back in 2014. So just before I started kicking around Bitcoin. And that was thanks to Tim Ferriss. I read The 4-Hour Work Week, and then I read, what else has this guy written? Oh, he's written The 4-Hour Body. What's that? And he really blew the lid off, the health, the crap, the shit that we eat, and the shit we're tricked into believing is healthy for us, like breakfast muesli, for example, is just a great big bowl of sugar, and then you pour all of this shitty milk all over it as well, and people wonder why they're fat and hungry. it is madness, truly. But since Bitcoin, obviously, you have the carnivore guys, and I've been, I've not gone full carnivore, but enjoy my meat. But we grow our own vegetables and things at home. I love doing that as well. And we just try and buy as locally and eat as close to what would probably be like a paleo diet, something more primal, rather than all of the refined sugars. And of course, there's going to be treats every now and then, the odd dessert. But now I've found like this raw milk ice cream.
Are you making that yourself?
No, he had it. He had it in the freezer.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I've not tried to make it yet, but we should.
So I've got a good recipe for that. It's I haven't made it in a while. I think it's just like heavy cream, raw milk, honey, sweeten it with raw honey, some egg yolks, and it's like way better. I'm not even a big ice cream guy. To me, it's way better than the stuff you buy at the store. Right. For my kids, it's a little less compelling than the store-bought stuff, but I try to avoid that. I'd say the health rabbit hole is probably the one I've gone deepest down, and went full carnivore for about 18 months. Wasn't quite working out the way I'd hoped, and now I'm animal-based, so I do raw honey and fruit, raw milk with my eggs and beef. But it's I'll tell you what, man, it's amazing what. It's just amazing some of the changes that just learning about sound money does for your life. And like my wife's now on this journey. I was going to ask though, is your family pretty well? You've got kids, so I understand why some of the sweets emerge from time to time. But are they pretty well on board with some of these things?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Even our 14-year-olds, sometimes they'll go out to meet their friends in town and they come back and they're like, oh, my God. You should see what they buy and what they eat, like the sweets or like the ice creams, and if they're gonna go and get an ice cream in town, they know now which is like the best one with the best product, and they don't mind if it's £1 more, but like just grabbing something out of a freezer and its luminous colors and all that. No, they understand about the food dyes and whatever else, and they don't even. They don't even really enjoy like the shitty chocolate either, because their tastes have changed. We always buy the best chocolate we can find without any lecithins. And now that if they were to take a bite of like a dairy milk bar or something, it'd be
too much.
What is this? It's like paste. So
that's great,
and that's great to see. And they're getting orange peeled as well, just by osmosis, being around, coming to the conferences, meeting people, and it seeps in different ways, different directions. Everybody gets it in a different manner. Something is going to set you on fire. Bitcoin's going to light that fire within you somehow. You just haven't found the topic yet. If your partner or if your kids aren't fully there. I mean, I'm still trying to find it with some very close family members. I don't know what it will be. And you think after 550 odd Bitcoin podcast episodes, they might have listened to one, but what can you do?
I'll tell you what, man, I can relate to that, because I've got a great relationship with my entire family. I've convinced them all to buy a little bit of Bitcoin, but I would not say I have any Bitcoiners in my family. And I don't know if I've had my wife listens occasionally,
But the rest of them, I think maybe a total of like an hour of listening amongst the other six or seven adults in close proximity. Like the lack of curiosity is just, to me, hard to understand. But, you know, it's a lot of people, so maybe I'm the crazy one.
Right.
And by the way, you see, you mentioned like bringing your kids along the ride. You have Lauren asks a question at the beginning of your podcast, which I think is really cool. We talked a lot about homeschooling on the first time I had you on the show. Any updates there? Any sort of new developments, things you're experimenting with? Maybe kind of just frame for anyone what your approach to homeschooling is, because it's not just traditional homeschooling, as I recall. You guys are you're a little more innovative than that.
Yeah, it's kind of, it's a bit of a misnomer, that word homeschooling. There needs to be a better natural learning or something, I guess. But what I have noticed, I was approached the other day by a guy called Jed Bush on Twitter.
Okay.
And him and like three or four other homeschooling dads are starting their own Bitcoin podcast, and they've invited me to go on, and they're going to be speaking at different conferences around the world. I think there was a homeschooling panel at Bitcoin Alaska. You have Scott and Tali Lindberg, who are the creators of the game Hoddle Up, and they homeschooled all of their four kids. And they go around homeschooling conferences and talk about Bitcoin. And they have their own podcast going as well. There's the Bitcoin Junior Club Twitter account, which is doing everything that they can to like curate all of the Bitcoin educational material that's out there. And that's getting more and more. You had the Tuttle Twins come on board like big time in the last 18 months. They're doing great work. That's been the biggest thing that I've noticed. But on a personal level, our kids have done, they've done private school, state school, they've done Montessori school, they've done schools on the beach, they've done full-on homeschooling, we've done what you would call world schooling, where we traveled with them for 3 years and just used the world as a learning tool. Unschooling, some people call it, where it's just like you just sit back and just let the kids, you know, where is their interest going to lie, and then get in the way, put the tools in their hands when they need it. And I have people reach out to me all the time. It's like, okay, what's the best way for us to do this? What programs do we need to sign up for? What educational material do we need? And what curriculum should we be following? Like, none. Like, You can't bring school to the home. This is why homeschool is such a bad idea. You've got to, you're not doing that shit anymore. No systematic bullshit. Just let it happen naturally. And for the first 3 to 6 months, if you take your kid out of school, say you take an 11-year-old, very depressed, anxious, withdrawn child out of school because you know as a parent that's not their natural being, you're going to have to just let them sit for 3 to 6 months and just let it play out and just let their personality start, because they've been in a system for 6 to 7 years at that point, and that all needs to come crumbling down. And so does yours as a parent. Generally, people looking into this have been through their own conditioning. They've done a 20-year stretch of academia back in the day. But that's formed what you are now, and you're still thinking, and this is the mistake my wife and I made in the very, very early days. We were like, right, 9 o'clock, it's science with the U2, and you go over there with mommy, and you're going to read some books and study some grammar. And like the kids are like, what? And we thought we were going on our travels around the world. That's what you told us. No, there's school bullshit in the house. Like, you know, it doesn't work. You can't be the teacher, the parent, and a friend and just switch the hats just because the time says. Like, this is the absolute, that was a disastrous time for us, you know, as we were navigating these waters. It wasn't until we stepped off, and I always point towards Peter Gray's work, and his book Free to Learn, and he talks about, you know, putting, and it was very tough for Peter because Peter was an academic and so was his wife. Peter still works as a professor at the University of Boston, but at the age of 11, his son Scott was like, I ain't going to school anymore, I'm done. And they had a meeting with the principal,
And the principal said, well, listen, Scott, you're going to have to keep coming. And this is what your mom and dad say. And he turned around and told them all to go to hell. So Peter's life got turned upside down, but he found what they called like a democratic school. And we have one here in the UK, which my twins have been going to for the last 2 years. And that's opt-in. Lessons are there if you want them, but you have to opt into them. So the teacher gets mixed age groups in the class, and the knowledge that the only reason these kids are there is because they want to be there, rather than all kids the same age turn up at 3:15 for an hour and 15 minutes to learn from page 21 today. You know, what is more inspiring to a teacher, like the former or the latter? So if you're a teacher and you're a mentor and you want to make a difference to kids, you want mixed age groups, and you want to be just bouncing questions around and feeding off the differentials of opinions and knowledge, and, you know, just helping aid all of that. And this is what they've been doing for the last couple of years. And then the next 2 years, we found a place just close to us that's going to, they're going to go and try. It's like a land management course. So we're preparing them for the citadel life. They're going to learn how to, husband animals. And the on site, they've got everything from insects all the way up. I think the biggest animal they've got is a goat. They got chickens and whatever else in between. And they learn about, how to build stock fencing, how to, revive wild ponds. And they've got two industrial grade greenhouses on site, so you can grow everything, absolutely whatever you want, and mess around and look it into electroculture, which I've got my twins outside. We've got our own little vegetable patch, and we've been reading up on electroculture. So they're going to be doing that alongside studying for GCSEs, they're called here in the UK, equivalent to your SATs, SATs, SATs. Well, you just realized that. English, math, and biology. So that seems like an interesting course. And then they'll be 16, and then I'm sure they'll probably be ready to go face the world in whatever way that they're looking to add value somewhere.
Man, I love to hear that. And it's fun talking to you about this sort of thing, because what I've learned is every time I think I'm right about something, like the further into Bitcoin I get, I realize that there's like a new door to open and to look in and explore. And so, it sounds to me like we're probably homeschool family, probably starting out where you kind of started out. It's a little more, typical traditional scheduled and everything. In fairness, we've got an 18-month-old and a 4-year-old, high energy and high maintenance at the moment, on top of our almost 7-year-old, who is the one that we're, trying to, teach to read and, learn sort of the basic skills to be able to then go sort of learn more independently on a lot of things. But I wouldn't be surprised if after this conversation, as we move into sort of a new, we do a school year calendar, but we also sort of have, like, I've been doing Tuttle Twins through the summer and that sort of thing. I would not be shocked if next time we talk, I'm like, Daniel, we're way less structured. It's so much more fun. It's, so I think we just make bits and bits of progress as we go.
Read Peter Gray. All right, I've had him on the podcast. Go listen to that interview.
Awesome. Yeah. Free to learn, you said?
Free to learn. Yeah.
Okay.
I had him on the podcast. Another great person to listen to is Naomi Fisher. I've had her on the podcast as well.
Okay.
So you'll get a lot out of those.
Okay, terrific. And then last topic, I hate to turn dark right before we wrap here, but you've shared a lot online about geoengineering, cloud seeding in particular. Could you maybe explain the rabbit hole? How bad is it? I tend to see a lot of things coming out of the UK. I don't see much over my house here in central United States, but I see a lot of other places around the country are getting pretty bad, it seems. Why don't you maybe frame that, and why is it a rabbit hole you've gone down?
Yeah, I was dragged into that one. Didn't want to go in. Didn't believe it. Thought it was nonsense, and didn't want to be that guy, even when it clicked. Even when it clicked and I'm like, oh shit, yeah, this is happening. A lot of, dark introspection chats with some other Bitcoiners that pulled me into this rabbit hole. And I'm like, all right, fine. I see it now. And there's a book here. This is by Peter Kirby. It's called Chemtrails Exposed, a New Manhattan Project. And this is the second edition. And this is what it looks like. And you can see it's a pretty extensive book. And I have, of all the books I've read, I've never read a book that has so many receipts and citations in the book. At the end of every chapter, there is, so here we go. So hang on. Like, this is the end of a chapter here. So this is just the...
Oh, wow. That's the end of one chapter.
Like, this is still the same, the end of the same chapter, right? You know, like, there's... What are we up to now?
He knew no one would believe him if he didn't bring the receipts.
Yeah, so there's 8 pages of receipts just on that chapter. And it's like it's almost the same like after every chapter. So the research is done, and the evidence is for you all to see. All you've got to do is look up into the sky and just think. And when you see these, we get them here a lot over in Europe, particularly Northern Europe, just grid patterns all over the sky. And people are like, well, what is it then? You know, it's what what are they spraying up there? So it's just been admitted, actually, in the UK court. No, excuse me, the House of Commons or the House of Lords, can't remember exactly, that there was a company started, or a research group called ARIA, A-R-I-A, and they were funded with $800 million back in 2020 or 2021. It's Dominic Cummings. And if nobody's ever heard of this name, Dominic Cummings was the guy that was basically got Boris Johnson elected. And he was also the guy that, do you remember the Cambridge Analytica scandal?
Yeah, with right. Facebook. So
he was the guy behind that scandal. Like, he was the guy funding Cambridge Analytica to, you know, completely split Britain over the Brexit vote by using... harnessing all of the data, mass data harvesting project on Facebook and other socials, but Facebook was the big one back then, and then just pitting everybody against each other. So there was a lady called Carol Cadwallader that outed him, and he was kind of, you know, just put in the back benches and never really heard of again until he founded this ARIA, A-R-I-A. What is it like? You just have to check it. It's like... Advanced Research Institute Association, some bullshit like that. £800 million given to him when Rishi Sunak was the Chancellor of the Exchequer for Boris Johnson. And it's now come out that £60 million of that is being used to fund geoengineering projects in and around the UK. It's out there. This is in normie news now. Like, it's been all over the papers. And these projects include something called solar radiation modification. And solar radiation modification is the bright idea of spraying from airplanes tiny little particles of aluminium, sulfur dioxide, and barium and strontium are the same the main culprits, along with coal fly ash, which I found out about in this book, and I'll tell you what coal fly ash is in a second. That gets sprayed into the air, and this is why these so-called contrails that we see just persist. They don't disappear. If you remember as a kid, I remember as a kid vividly, you'd see the jet go over, it'd be so cool, and be a little white line behind it, and then that would just disappear. You'd be like, wow, they're exhaust fumes. What you do see in the sky, these massive long plumes of white chemtrail that just hangs there. And then there's another one, then there's another one, then isn't, and they start crossing. And before you know it, they all just slowly spread. And the idea from these mega brain scientists, geoengineers, is that that blanket will reflect the sunlight away from the planet and save us all, because we've got to be, you know, very cognizant of the fact that just a 2-degree raise in our environment is going to send us all into a fireball and we're all going to die a horrible death. And if we don't do something about it, then, goodbye world. This is the kind of bullshit that we get fed. Now, coal fly ash, which Peter Kirby talks about here,
you get coal fly ash from burning coal at electrical plants for, you know, our electricity. And that smoke that goes up the chimney stack, that used to go up the chimney stack and then straight into the air, that became a problem, right? So that got stamped out. That now gets caught. There's these special machines that line the chimneys that catches a lot of the ash and the soot and whatever else, but that creates a byproduct that's got to go somewhere. So what can we do with it? It went into cement originally, and it still does. It's a huge $1 billion industry. You can just, if you just Google coal fly ash industry, you'll find the different uses for it. And one of the uses is for solar radiation modification geoengineering projects. The fact that people are willfully blind to it, and I was guilty of this for years, so when I started tweeting about this, again, to go back, you know, I had a deep dive with these guys that I really trust. I'm like, guys, if I start tweeting about this, this could, I mean, you know, I'm just going to look crazy. No one's going to take me seriously anymore. And they're like, well, yeah, what can you do about it? And so I slept on that. And then I'm like, wait a minute. That's fucking ego. That's self-censoring. If I know something to be true, and, you know, I've done the research and all of this kind of stuff, this isn't the only thing I've read up on, then, I've got to start telling people about what I've seen. And thankfully, Ben Wehrman picked up on it. He went even deeper, and he's had some incredible guests on his show, like Matt Landman, who made the documentary Frankenskies, which is a great documentary. Anyone should watch that. There's another documentary called The Dimming. Everybody should go and watch that, and go and find the little sound clip of President Johnson. That was him, right? Yeah,
Lyndon Johnson. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Vietnam, the Great Society, the Great Society. Yeah,
he's giving a talk in his cosplay, like cloak and hat, at some university, about if we can control the world's cloud cover, we can control the world. And this is all very much linked to the new Manhattan Project, which is what Peter Kirby is talking about here, where all of this kind of weather manipulation research was going on during the new Manhattan Project, and it's all directly linked to HAARP. And I don't know if you've looked at HAARP before, H-A-A-R-P. If you just Google HAARP Alaska, you can see the original HAARP project. It is an awful thing to look at. It's about the size of two football fields and just this array of masts and aerials. And they're basically ionospheric heaters. And what they were doing is playing around with pulsing the ionosphere with high microwave and radio wave frequencies just to see, you know, shits and giggles. What would that do? And like anything else that you put money into and research into and hire the best people to do this research under the guise of, you know, it's for national security to be able to control the weather. So every country's up to it. It's a complete mess. We live under it. So does everything we eat, because all of this stuff just rains down on you. You even have Monsanto now. I think they're developing aluminium. They're developing seeds that are not stunted. They're kind of protected against aluminium in the soil. Okay. So where's the aluminium coming from? Why is there such a high aluminium count in the soil where there shouldn't be any at all? The tops of mountains. Aluminium is it's not a natural mineral. It's something, you know, that is smelted together. It's a wild one, mate. So look up at the sky, everybody. I'm looking right now at a white blanket. So what's happened is we've been geoengineered. They've laid down some lines. They've slowly spread. The ionospheric heaters have now been decentralized. it looks as though Kirby talks about this, and I believe it's probably correct because I've also heard this from Barry Trower and another British guy called Mark Stone, that the 5G towers that have just exploded all over the world are basically decentralized HARP installations, which are sending, can have the ability to send up high frequency microwave and radio frequencies into low-lying cloud. And if that low-lying cloud has been laid down and it's already laced with aluminium and whatever else, then, you know, it's a lot more conductive, and they can just be way more manipulative with the weather. And people are like, well, what's the big idea? What are they doing that for? Well, it down-engineers you. It makes you more depressed. It makes you, this is what Jack Cruz talks about. It was actually Jack that really put me onto this, like kind of unlocked it. Is in a 2-hour conversation I had with him on the podcast. And he just randomly talked about, well, why do you think the landline's down in the sky? That reflects back the sunlight because we are light beings and this is what we need. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, it sounds so dark, but the fact that, I mean, it is very clearly at this point happening. Like if you look at, I haven't even dug deep into this stuff. It's just kind of beginning to intrigue me. But, I mean, it's undeniable at this point. The question is basically, what are we going to do about it? Because it's like the fiat monster, right? It's not an easy one to slay. But I think the more awareness we can bring to these sorts of things. I mean, I'll tell you what, I think that after communism, the climate catastrophe movement we're going to look back on is just incredibly dark. I think there are a lot of people who are not on board with sort of the mayhem, but like sympathize or assume that there's legitimacy to it or something like that. They're going to look back in 20 years and say, what in the hell was I asleep at the wheel for, you know? So I appreciate folks like yourself bringing awareness to this and making, I know it is a tough decision to say, I'm going to talk about this. You know, I represent a company. And so when I go on Twitter, I have to be a little more careful about some of the opinions that I express because it could get pretty ugly pretty quickly. But I'm glad there are people like you and I can have you share what you're learning on the podcast. So
and shout out to the shout out to the Beef Initiative as well, because they're over in Texas. And they were tweeting about this because Texas had those awful floods recently. And they've found out, they've done the deep dive, they're getting receipts, and it looks as though there's a company over there called Rainmaker that is being implemented heavily. And what they do is they fly drones up into clouds and seed the clouds by flying drones up there. And they were doing operations 2 or 3 days before these floods hit. So you got Texas Slim and the guys over at the Bitcoin Beef Initiative really leaning into this as well. And we just need more and more Bitcoiners that, you know, if you see it, if you understand what's going on, or if you want to even talk about it, then let me know, DM me, and I'll happily share any resources. And just the more people we have talking about it, the more awareness we can raise, the more pressure we can put on this stuff. Look, you know, big industry used to dump shit into our waters, right? First it was in the oceans, then it was in the rivers. I mean, we've all seen Aaron Brockovich, right? We know what was going on there. And these companies, they have these huge waste products and they've got to go somewhere. And it has to go with a narrative first. And then a market needs to be built up around that. And it's when you learn in this book about Enron were running weather derivatives markets. Hundreds of billions of dollars tied up in weather derivatives markets. You're like, right, okay, you don't think that is going to incentivize somebody to like fund a cloud seeding operation somewhere over here? And you've got obviously big ag, you know, the amount of money at derivatives markets you have on corn and wheat and soybean around the world. And you know that you can make it, if you manipulate the weather, you're going to decimate a crop, or if you're going to like, you know, really have a blow off year with yield. There's big money at play, and every time you follow the money, you can get a lot closer to the truth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is well said. Daniel, I've got one last question for you that I ask at the end of every podcast, and that is, you've expressed a few, but what is maybe another unpopular opinion that you have, and you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it?
Unpopular opinion.
What have we not talked about already?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I can prompt you with, we didn't really talk about government strategic reserves, the White House digital asset report, if you saw that come out, or anything like that, if you've got any.
Didn't really. I did write a thread about Trump launching his dollar Trump coin, and that got over like 2 million views, so that obviously hit the crypto world as well.
What was the take?
The take there is like the amount of insider trading and conflict of interest was just disgusting. I mean, this is before the Musk and Trump theater when they, you know, we've had the big bromance, then the big fallout, right? The big breakup. Normies just love this shit, right? They just think they're part of this freaking kind of, I don't know, drama that they watch on Netflix. But at that point, Musk was very close to him and David Sachs, obviously. And you got two PayPal mafia guys there. And I don't know whether people are aware, but David Sachs was the CFO of PayPal. So you've got PayPal written all over this kind of shit. And when you followed the money, like, why launch on Solana out of interest? You had David Sachs, who's, you know, got bags and bags of Solana. He's actually boasted and bragged about this on their All In pod with him and Chamath and Jason. There's that clip that went viral around about 18 months ago. And then you follow Musk's involvement, and Musk's involvement was all the way down to his cousin, Lyndon Reeve, who he bailed out of SolarCity against the wishes of the Tesla stockholders at that time. Lyndon Reeve is one of the earliest bag holders of Solana as well. He's like, what? So you got these guys that are advising the president to launch a freaking shitcoin, and but you make sure you launch it on Solana, boss. And he, oh my God, it's just so disgusting.
Is your unpopular opinion then that we have not seen the first Bitcoin president?
Yeah.
I couldn't agree more with that. That's not unpopular.
He's not
here.
A Bitcoiner. It's just a joke. Unpopular opinion, the assassination attempt was just pure theater.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And utter total theater. And, you know, an incredible photo opportunity to be smeared in blood with the American flag and the blue skies. It's just a joke. But people are like, oh, but bro, people died. You're like, yeah, you have crisis actors for all this kind of stuff. We've seen it before, like the Boston bombings, right? The Marathon bombings. And then the same lady that's supposed to be dead and, you know, mutilated turns up and is photographed and then in like two or three red flag events down the line. They can do this stuff. Like, it's just theater, all of it. And it's all bread and circuses for us poor morons that just sit there in front of the television, you know, being programmed. Like, you know, it's called programming for a reason on the television. And then people are just so addicted to all of this political drama. And, you know, it's engineered that way. You've got a 50-50 split. That's perfect. You've only got two parties. Well, that's the thing, right? Elon Musk announced a third party. Okay, where's the Libertarian Party? Weren't they the third party? I don't know. What's going on?
I'll tell you what, the further, the more I learn, the more I talk to folks like yourself, because a lot of these things, I saw the Trump assassination thing, and I didn't immediately form an opinion. Like, I sort of took it at face value, because, like, I watched the video and just sort of, you know, I didn't really think that much about it. And then you start to see new things leak out and like someone run across the front of the stage and then they pull a bunch of photographers up and it's like, hang on, there's a potential gunman threat and they're just bringing like someone ran across the stage to bring photographers in front of the stage. And I'm like, okay, like now maybe I need to actually think about this a little bit harder because I haven't. So I think you're probably onto something with a lot of these things.
Dive into it. There's a guy called, what was his name? Ole Domegaard or Domegaard, Ole, O-L-E, Domegaard, does a real deep dive into that day. And there's so much inexplicable stuff. Like really. And then the weird thing was, what was it, 2 weeks later, he's in PubKey buying a burger with Lightning. And I'm like, guys, is anyone taking a picture of his ear? Like, what, that's just fully healed. Yeah, you know, since when did we stop trusting and verifying? You know, everyone's taking like pictures of him buying a burger in PubKey, right? Can someone just get a close up of his ear? Like, no one think it.
Yeah, I think the first red flag that I saw on that day though was very shortly after he was not at all critical of the Secret Service. He's like, hey, they've done a great job. And I'd be like, hey, what the, if there was an assassination attempt on my life and I had tons of people surrounding me who were supposed to make sure that never happened, I'd be like, what the hell is going on, right? And there didn't seem to be like a lot of confusion or frustration on his part after the fact. That to me seems like a sort of obvious question to ask. So, okay, I think you'll make some people mad with that. Hopefully you make some people curious too.
Look, if people get angry, you know, if people are triggered, sit with the triggering and figure out why it's triggered you.
Yeah.
And then start looking around.
I think that's good advice. Well, Daniel, thank you so much, man. This has been a blast. I told you we'd shoot for an hour and we're like an hour and a half right now, but that's, I don't think you and I could probably sit down and talk for just an hour. So I'm grateful for you letting me go a little bit long and look forward to hopefully having you again in the future. You want to tell people where they can find you?
Yeah, sure. Come find me on Fountain App, the Once Bitten podcast. That's where it's hosted now. Thank you to Nick and Oscar. They've built out just an incredible product there over the last few years. And I don't now have to host my RSS feed on Spotify. It's on Fountain App, and they just rolled out videos. So you can go over there and watch it as if you were watching YouTube. So now we can all, as Bitcoiners, we can all move away from YouTube. We can all move away from Spotify. Sure, it still gets uploaded to Spotify, but we don't need to be supporting those platforms. We can be supporting platforms that are built by Bitcoiners for Bitcoiners. And it's Nostr enabled as well. So, you know, it's doing all the right stuff. So go find me on Fountain App. Just look for the Once Bitten podcast on Fountain.
I love it. Daniel, thank you so much for your time, man. Great chatting, and we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks, mate. Take care.
Cheers. And that's a wrap again. Hope you enjoyed this conversation with Daniel. I know I could have talked to him a lot longer. We had so many more topics that I would like to cover, so we'll have to have him back. Go follow him on X and Nostr. And do me a favor, check out his podcast. Fantastic, fantastic show. And of course, if you need help taking your Bitcoin into proper 100% self-custody, no counterparties, no nonsense, no compromises, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Can schedule a free consult with a member of our team. We'd love to talk to you about how we can help with all of those things, as well as online privacy, setting up a privacy phone, getting you a Plan B residency option, very important for many people in an increasing number of areas of the world. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. And as always, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.